can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Going on, everyone. I am your host for GSMC Movie Podcast, Ariane. I am joined today by three other beautiful people.
I'm Heidi.
I'm Stacy.
And new GSMC podcast host here.
Jay, hey there, how's it going? I'm going to be the new host for the sci-fi and technology. I'm also a big movie buff, so this one fits me rather well. So it should be a lot of fun.
Hey.
Exciting movies today. So, we are going to start off with White Boy Rick. I went and saw this movie this week. I thought it was interesting. I watched a lot of documentaries regarding White Boy Rick and his story. His birth name is Richard Wershe Jr. The movie depicted him pretty well to the type of person he was. His family, not so much. As far as watching some podcasts, or not watching, listening and watching documentaries. Anyway, the story is about a 14-year-old boy, Richard Wershe Jr., who in the 1980s becomes an undercover FBI informant to keep his father from going to prison for selling illegal guns. He was ultimately sentenced to a life sentence in prison without parole for a nonviolent drug charge. This movie was released last Friday, September 14th. The director was Yann Demange. I don't know if that's French.
I don't know either.
I probably just butchered this man's name. Anyway, it was written by Andy Weiss, Noah Miller, and Logan Miller. Andy Weiss has written a lot of documentary and biopic. He's wonderful. The cast stars Matthew McConaughey, who plays Rich Wershe Sr., Richie Merritt, who is a brand new actor, newcomer, has never acted a day in his life, didn't even know what Back to One meant. He did a great job. He did an awesome job. And he plays Rick Wershe Jr., White Boy Rick. Belle Powley, she's from London. She has a beautiful accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'll let you know a little bit of how she played her American accent there. Anyway, she plays Rick's sister, Dawn. We have Jonathan Majors, RJ Seiler, and YG, who play the Curry brothers. So, a little bit about White Boy Rick. I was pleased with the movie. They did a really good job about depicting the 1980s. Everybody watched it. Were you able to see it, Jay?
I didn't get a chance to, no. But is it like early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s?
84, isn't
it? 84, exactly. 84 to 88 when he got sent to...
And is it like in... Where is it located? Like New York, LA?
Detroit, actually, okay. Yes.
Oh, Michigan, yes. Detroit, see, that was partly why I didn't watch it. Because kind of I just didn't want to. Because I am not a fan of the 80s. And also, I know Detroit was once a great city, but everything in like even my mother's lifetime of Detroit just feels really depressing. So I was like, you're going to be super depressing city and the 80s. You just got like already two negatives for me there. Interesting story, but I don't know if I can.
Yeah,
check
I was actually
out.
Supposed to see it, but I wasn't able to. Something came up, you know, I want to say adult thing or something like that. Some kind of thing. I'm like, well, I have to do this.
Right.
Well, and I didn't really recognize any of the cast from the previews except for Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. So I was like, you've only got the one positive to go against both those two negatives for me. You're not strong enough, but I got to go see that.
Now, right. I'm curious real quick. How was McConaughey in this?
He did a really good job. His character is kind of a what's the right terminology?
Not a great father, but trying.
Not at all. Not at all. And he played that well, though. He played that well. It's like his intentions were good as a father, but it just wasn't good enough. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but he did a really good job. With the cinematography and kind of the, I'm not going to get into movie details, but he did a good job. I don't think I've ever seen him in a role like that where he plays a bad father, you know what I mean, kind of character. He's always kind of the cool guy, you know, sex symbol kind of guy in there. And he was just, of course, with the mullet haircut, how can you really kind of get into
awesome with the 80s?
So basically he had a good sized chunk role in the movie, right? He wasn't just kind of like supporting, right? Or was he?
No, he was supporting. The newcomer, Richie Merritt, was the absolute lead in that. So,
he was good. He was really good. I was so impressed.
Because I saw him in the trailers and I was just like, you look, I can tell you're new.
I thought he played that perfectly. Like when I saw him, I'm sorry, I saw this movie. I have lots of opinions.
Yeah,
I loved it. I think when I saw him on stage, I thought he played really well with McConaughey.
Yeah.
Especially someone who, like Matthew McConaughey, who has been doing this for so long, to pair him with a complete newbie, I thought was a really smart choice by the director. And when I saw, I didn't see any of the documentaries about this story, but when I saw this, I was like, that guy is definitely White Boy Rick. Like, right. I completely believe it. He had the creeper, like, young teenage caterpillar mustache that I totally believe. Like, he had, like, the swag of the 80s that's, like, they didn't even have to tell me that he dropped out of high school. Right. I just, like, read that on his face.
Yeah.
Like, he had, like, swagger, like, I know how to sell drugs. I know how to be cool.
Yes.
Even though his haircut didn't tell me that.
I think it was the curls, honestly.
Something about it. I mean, he has this line where he goes to a girl and just like, hey, Beth Moore. And like this grimy part of my heart was just like, oh, I love it.
Wow. Like, okay,
I thought it was great. I enjoyed
years.
It.
Now, did he actually look? Because like, I know sometimes in these movies, they'll show like a picture of the person somewhere during the film or something that he actually looked like the character. They just kind of say, hey, we want this kid to be this character. And if he looks like it or not, well, we don't really care.
He resembled him a lot other than the curly hair. Rick Rushy Jr., the original guy, has straight hair, but the only difference is his hair is more curly, more full.
Okay.
But as far as the mustache and everything, he did.
It was
a good
on point.
His speech was even there too. Mm-hmm. So that was good too.
So he did a good job going method, is what you're saying?
Most definitely.
Nice.
I think that going with Matthew McConaughey is what helped Richie Merritt was that he didn't even know who Matthew McConaughey was.
Wow. Oh, nice.
Right.
So real newbie.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Amazing.
He, an interview that I watched with the cast was they all wanted to meet the new guy playing White Boy Rick, and they met at a bowling alley, and Matthew McConaughey was waiting for him outside, and he had his picture. He knew what he looked like, and he was just like, he would have walked, Matthew McConaughey says, he would have walked right by me. He did not know who I was, what I looked like. They asked him, do you know who Matthew McConaughey is? And he was just like, nope. I sure don't.
Yeah, man, that'd be too hard for me to believe. It's like, you don't know who he is.
Right.
I don't understand.
He's just done
so much. Exactly. You know, like you don't know who he is?
I also felt that there's like so many scenes with Matthew McConaughey that I felt were very believable. Like, I think he just played like nervous, sweaty, like uncomfortable so well.
Yes.
Like, I felt it was very believable to me of him in this role of like a desperate father.
Right.
I felt it was very believable.
Right. And it doesn't really give you a backstory on why he is the single father. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just kind of jumps into, okay, he's single dad, got two kids, and, you know, that's what it is. So I would have liked, you know, to hear why. Why are you the only person raising these kids? But it was just because the mom left, and you just don't really hear about that.
I feel like they hinted a little bit, like right at the beginning when he's talking to his daughter and he's like mad at her. And she says something like, mom left you because you're a loser.
Right.
Which is like so sad. Like you just get an immediate glimpse into the family dynamics so quickly.
So did the film ever drag on or go on really long? Or did it flow really well pretty much throughout?
I feel like there were some dead moments where it was just like, okay, move on. This is unnecessary. And then just, I don't know, because I watched some of the documentaries first, I'm that girl that goes to the movie theater that has to be in an empty movie theater because I talk to the screen. I'm that person.
You're that
they're
person.
Like, you need to be quiet. We're trying to watch. Okay. So in certain instances, I was like, that's not how it happened. That is so not what happened.
Wow.
Everyone in the theater just immediately knows, like, oh.
Right. You're that.
Oh, they're here again. They were here last time.
Exactly. So I've been told by my sisters they will not go to movies with me.
I've been told by that with one of mine, too, so it's kind of funny.
But, yeah, they're different. I've heard that the sister, Dawn Wershe, the real person, she did not like how they depicted her family, which I don't really feel like it was up to her. You know, she can have her opinion. Of course, that's her and her family. But the characters definitely spent a lot of time talking to Rick Wershe Jr., asking him. I think it was like for 2 years or more, Matthew McConaughey went and visited him in the Detroit prison, had a few conversations, you know, kind of wanted to really get to know what the story was about. You know what I mean? But I get that you have to make it, you know, movie-esque, you know, you want people to come see it.
Right.
Yeah, so, of course.
So how was the story in the movie? Because in watching the trailer, that was part of why I was like, I don't know about this. Because I didn't really get much of anything from the trailers other than, okay, this is Detroit and the 80s, and it just looks terrible, and something about drugs, and something about the FBI, and that's all I've got. I don't know the order of any of that, or how he gets involved, except you even have to pay attention in the trailer to get that, oh, his father seems to sell guns, and he goes and sells it to these people.
Right.
I was like, what is this movie about?
Right, well, it was interesting, because that wasn't the dad's only job. That was his side job, just to make extra money, so it was... They kind of made it seem like this is all the dad does. He's a horrible influence, but they also didn't really, I don't feel like they really showed how much or how deep white boy Rick was into like the gangs and the money and the drugs. And they did do like one scene where it was like where the FBI agents were like, okay, you're going to go buy this amount of this for us. And that was just basically it. But watching the documentaries is like, he did so much more. They paid him so much to do such risky things for a 14-year-old. I have a 14-year-old, and I was just sitting there like, I would never. Are you serious?
Yeah. So it just sounds to me like maybe the trailer didn't do the film justice, maybe is what it is. Because I don't know if I even watched the trailer personally, but I was kind of like with her. I just, there's a lot of movies that are like this where, hey, it's based on a true story. Oh, another one. Okay. So,
right.
So there's a lot in Hollywood with that now, too. So it kind of gets overkill sometimes.
Right. But then, yeah, it didn't depict the... A lot of facts were left out, but again, you know, it's Hollywood. They want to sell movies. That's their job. You know what I mean? So we're going to take a quick break and then come back and speak more about Detroit and White Boy Rick and other stories in Detroit.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Ariane, and we have Heidi, Jay, and Sarah. We're going to go ahead and talk.
Stacy,
I'm so sorry. I know. Why do I do that?
It's okay. But yeah, so anyways, the second film is Detroit, which I chose because I knew we were going to be talking about White Boy Rick, and all I knew, again, was 80s and Detroit, and I was like, well, I don't like the 80s, so we're definitely not going with 80s, so what else can we go with about Detroit? Oh, hey, there was this movie just a year ago called Detroit. Let's do that. That works. So this film is actually also based on real-life events. This takes place during the 1967 Detroit riots, and this is actually based on the Algiers Motel incident, which I knew of the Detroit riots, but I had never heard of the actual Algiers Motel incident, which is a very specific thing where at the end, 3 people did end up killed, possibly, it seems, by the Detroit police, although the court case never came to any specific result on that.
No.
So we start with the Detroit riots, and this is directed by Kathryn Bigelow, and it's done in a very interesting way. We've talked about Kathryn Bigelow a couple of times on the show because we ended up doing Point Break, which is such a not Kathryn Bigelow film that I'm very surprised by that. But then you do have her doing things like Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty in Detroit, and this feels very much more of that, okay, we're talking about a serious topic, Kathryn Bigelow sort of directed film. Because this is taking place during the Detroit riots, it has this sort of almost frantic, frenetic thing to it with the camera moves a lot, not in like shaky cam way, but almost as if you, a person, were there during the riots and you don't quite know what's going on and you're just trying to get through things.
It definitely gives you that intense feeling.
Yes.
The cinematography.
It does seem to be using, I think, if it's not using exact footage from the riots, some of it is shot in a way to make it seem like it's actual real footage from the riots. In the way she shoots, but then other things with the characters are shot, obviously, like, this is a movie, and we're getting shots that, you know, no news camera at the time would have gotten. This involves multiple characters, and we start with all those characters at different points, so it's a bit confusing at first. So the main cast person I saw for this was John Boyega. He plays Melvin the Snooks, and I don't think I even knew his character's name until after the whole incident at the hotel happens, and then we're looking for the Snooks. Have you seen the Snooks? I'm like, you're looking for who and what are you saying?
Right.
So he plays, he has multiple jobs, it seems, and he, during this event, is a security guard at a grocery store. He's guarding it with another man so that it won't get, you know, trashed during the riots, because part of what was happening was a lot of things were being looted or burned because there was a lot of, you know, anger coming out of the people in that way. So he's been hired for this night to guard the grocery store. The National Guard has been brought in to help with
control, I guess.
Exactly. So he happens to see them. They park outside the store he's guarding. He goes over to talk to them, just, you know, he says to let them know they're there because he is African-American, and there's very clearly a feeling that any African-American on the streets right now, there's a curfew. They're not supposed to be out. You do see him actually lie for a kid who's out after curfew, saying, oh, this is my nephew. He's just coming to see me. He's clearly trying to do the right thing, but at the same time, still trying to do his job. There is Larry and Fred, and I also don't think I knew their names for quite a bit. Larry is part of the Dramatics, which is a singing group that is hoping to become famous. And Fred is, I want to say, somebody's brother, though I never really did get clear on that.
I think it's, I thought it, he was just a friend of the group. Like a really close friend to
somebody,
Right.
But it sounded, when we talk later, that I can't find out what happened. I wanted to say he said godbrother or my brother. But then he, the person who said that doesn't act like a family member as later things are revealed. So it's possible he is just a close friend there to support them as they're trying to become famous.
Right.
They get caught up in the riots and they can't get home, so they end up staying at the Algiers Motel for the night so that they're not on the street. And then we have various, there's some National Guards people, and there are the three Detroit police officers who will later be charged in the killing that goes on. And we actually start with them.
They weren't charged.
I mean, they were accused. Trial, but they were all acquitted. But yeah, we start with them actually, it's not even clear when we first meet them. They're in a car and they're driving and talking, and they just have on like light blue button-down shirts, and you don't see the like badge or anything at first. So I didn't even know they were police, but you start with them talking about, like, you know, the situation going on and how we're failing these people, you know, this is why this is happening. And then they see someone looting a grocery store, and they get out and chase him down with the shotguns. And it's like, oh, you're the cops. And now everything you were saying about we're failing these people is a little twisted. And the main one, I believe it's Pales, shoots the looter in the back as he's running away. And then it later turns out that looter dies. And Pales is sort of brought up before the internal affairs or whatever about this. And the officer who's doing the investigation talks about it, recommends that Pales be brought up on murder charges, but then says go back to work until we call. And I'm just like, you just said you're recommending murder charges. I get this is the middle of the Detroit riots, so you need like every officer you can get, but you, this guy just shot someone who was running away and clearly not a threat to him at all, and you're gonna put him back out there where there's still a bunch of looters and rioters.
It was so nonchalant, and he was just, like, just oops, like, sorry.
Really? And, he, and they clearly, there is still a bit, you get this a lot, especially, you know, given that this is 1967 and the times, and you do actually get this sort of little opening prologue of words on the screen talking about the Great Migration, which was a bunch of African Americans moving from the South to the North for factory jobs, thinking, you know, okay, now that we have the end of slavery and everything, I'm going to go where the jobs are. I'm going to go. It's going to be all better.
Right.
And then as they come into the cities, you get white flight, where the whites leave the cities for the suburbs, taking money and good jobs with them. So African Americans are then left in not great neighborhoods in the urban centers.
Rough situation.
Which is, and then you get with Detroit, where the jobs are also going overseas. So there's not even any jobs as you get there. Detroit's in a rough time, and people, specifically as the Detroit riots were happening, were just frustrated of things not seeming to ever change. And enter, you know, we open with the cops busting down an illegal nightclub, and it's the end of the Vietnam War, so they're arresting, you know, veterans who are still in uniform.
Right.
As they're arresting everybody. It's just sort of thing of like, this is the, there's one black detective, but then all the other cops are white, coming into a, you know, essentially all black neighborhood and arresting people. You can just see where this constant frustration comes. Hence the rioting, during the rioting. When they are at the Algiers Motel, they meet these two white girls who are from Ohio and are sort of, it's not clear if they ran away from home or something. There is a comment they have about not writing their parents for money anymore. So they're clearly sort of down on their luck, but they seem to like the people at the Algiers Hotel. They're nice. They're friendly. They meet up with Larry and Fred, and they take them to a room of a different person they've met at the Algiers Hotel, who ends up having a starter pistol. Why he has a starter pistol, it's never quite clear, but he clearly is perfectly fine to mess with it.
Right.
He uses that pistol to explain to the two white girls why the riots are going on, where this black anger is coming from. But then he later sees the National Guard that is lined up outside Melvin's store and decides, you know what, this is not okay that they can just line up or whatever and shoot at us and get away from it. Let me shoot at them.
And see how they like it.
Exactly. So he decides to shoot the starter pistol out the window at the National Guard. Now, it's a starter pistol. This is what they use, you know, to start races. It doesn't have a bullet or anything. It just lets off a sound. But that sound works because everyone does think, it's oh, someone's firing at us. Right. And we have seen previously in this film that they're very itchy.
Right.
Towards
they think they're
snipers.
Being, like, sniped. Yes.
There's a thing where there's a little girl who looks out a window and that moves the blinds and they call out sniper.
Oh,
that was hard.
Gosh,
yeah.
That was hard to watch.
Now, question, who else is in this movie besides John Boyega? Who else?
I didn't recognize anybody else.
The guy who played Falcon. What's his name?
Falcon from what? Oh,
from
yeah.
The Avengers.
Yeah. And he's still a veteran paratrooper.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. What is
I don't know his name.
I want to say it's Michael something.
I just saw it. And I can, Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, you're right.
Anthony Mackie.
That's
who,
it. So
yeah,
he was
plays
in
Falcon.
This. So he was so with John Boyega and him, and then the rest were just kind of.
But I didn't recognize any of. I sort of recognized the officer who played Pales, but then when I looked him up, I didn't really know him from anything. His face just looked sort of familiar.
Yeah, he,
but yeah, so
they're interesting.
And what's his name? Who plays Larry? I recognize because he's going to be in the new The Hate U Give. The film with Amanda Stenberg. He's the guy who plays her friend who ends up getting killed.
Oh,
so
okay.
As I was watching this, I was like, are you going to die in this too? I don't know how this ends, but I'm already like, are you just going to constantly be shot by cops in like the movies I'm going to see in the next year? Please don't. So yeah, there were a lot of people where I'm like, your face looks familiar, but you're one of those that guys where I've seen you, but I don't know your name well enough to be able to immediately go, oh, you are in anything, whatever. I only even recognized Anthony Mackie once we got to him explaining, oh, I'm a veteran and I did I was like, wait, you are a freaking paratrooper in
right.
Captain America. What is this and why do you all keep playing the same roles?
Characterized for sure.
Well, except paratrooper is such a very specific characterization. But we're going to take a short break right now, so stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. We are going to continue our conversation about the film Detroit. So this all sort of comes together. All the characters come together at the Algiers Motel. John Boyega's security guard ends up there because he comes with the National Guard who comes. We also get the three Detroit police officers, including the one who shot the man in the back, because they're still on duty because we're way overrun by all the riots. And then you also get the state police. Although I was confused by that at first, because the Detroit police are in light blue, the state police are in dark blue, and the National Guard are in green, and they all just show up at the hotel, but I didn't even know who the state police was until essentially they left. And right. I was just like, yeah. You're just different yeah. police officers, I don't know who you are. We never really get, I think, any of their names, but they do come up because part of what happened in the trial was there was confusion amongst the witnesses, amongst, you know, which officer from which unit did what. Mm-hmm. Right. This guy brought that guy into the other room. Oh, no, it was the National Guard, not the state police, etc. That comes up. So it does work to, for me as the viewer, to not know what's going on, because that's how the people who were experiencing it also were confused.
Right.
But so you get the friend of the two white girls who has shot the starter pistol out the window, and that's brought everyone to the Algiers Motel. Though we're actually in the annex of the motel and not the motel itself, so how they know specifically to go to the annex, I'm not sure of. But they do end up there, and they bring everyone they can find in the annex down to the floor, and they're trying to find, you know, okay, who's got the gun? There's a sniper in this. Someone was shooting at us. They're all clearly very on high tensions. Mm-hmm. Everyone heard gunshots. We're not going to deny that. But everyone in the hotel is saying, nobody has a gun.
And they couldn't find it.
Correct. They go through the rooms once they've gotten everybody down and they're looking for this gun and they can't find it. So now they've got everyone down on the first floor up against the walls. It's like, okay, someone is going to tell me who was shooting and where's the gun. So then you get John Boyega, who's brought into this. The guy who was actually doing the shooting of the starter pistol, he saw that they were coming. He didn't put two and two together that they were coming for him. He couldn't quite figure out why they were coming. He decided to try and run out the building. And he ends up getting shot by that same police officer who has a very strong tendency to shoot people in the back with his shotgun. Right. That's exactly what happens to that man as well. Mm-hmm. You see this a couple of times. He places a knife next to this guy as sort of like the story of, oh, he pulled a knife on me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Although the story he gives John Boyega when John Boyega comes in is, oh, he tried to grab my gun.
Right.
Which is why I shot him in the back.
And he looks down at the knife like, what?
John Boyega is very aware. I love him. I love his character. He was so sweet and respectful to everybody.
He was.
And he's clearly, you know, his goal seems to be just to keep as many people alive as possible. You saw that even when he stood up for the kid, he totally didn't know in the street of, oh, that's my nephew. Mm-hmm. Then when he gets to the hotel, he actually volunteers to take one of the people staying in the hotel upstairs to look for the gun. And he tells him, you know, you need to survive this. I need you to survive this night. So we are going to take, I think he takes like alcohol or whatever that he can find down to the police officers to try and solve this problem, because he's clearly just trying to get, you know, them to not be killed, because that's the situation that keeps happening with this riot. But oh my gosh, this was tense movie. Even though we as the viewers, we know what's going on, but we don't. There's obviously some liberty being taken here because looking it up after the fact and looking at the court case and what we all found out from that, the witnesses don't even seem to know the full story. Mm-hmm. Nobody's fully sure at the end of it who killed each of the different people. And everyone's story is different about, you know, who died when and who killed them.
Right.
So the writer had, you know, a bit to do with being like, okay, so this character is going to be killed in this situation by this person when he doesn't have the facts to back that up.
Right.
And some people I know were upset of like, oh, you took too much liberty. But it's like, okay, but this is we have no proof whatsoever of what went on this night.
Exactly.
You have to take some liberties there. But it was very tense. You are, especially if you don't know, like I didn't know the history of this, so you don't know who's going to survive.
Right.
And when we start with the police being in the room, we've obviously just killed somebody. And we've seen a number of people be killed beforehand. So it's not like, you know, oh, nobody's going to die. You very do have a strong feeling of anybody could die at any moment.
Exactly.
In this film. I was very super worried about whether or not John Boyega even would make it along, even though he does seem to have, if not the respect, at least the acknowledgement of the different officers of the different units. They don't immediately go, Black guy with a gun, let me shoot him.
Right.
He's able to walk into situations, and he has a security guard uniform on, which has a badge. So they're like, I'm not sure who you are right now, but you do seem to be somebody of authority, so we're just going to pause for a moment. Thank goodness. But then as you're going along with the night, it's like, is that person going to die? Is that person going to die? Someone else just got shot. Are you going to die? Like, you don't know if anybody's going to die. Even the two white girls who are in the hotel, who were also brought down and held against the wall. And the situation with them is very tense because all the officers are white. And there's this sort of like, oh, white girls in a hotel with a bunch of black guys. Why? Prostitution, yeah, exactly. Seems to be going on. Mm-hmm. So I found myself just sort of like on tenterhooks the whole thing. And I really liked this film up until about the last fourth or so.
Yeah.
Once we actually get out of the hotel and then start dealing with like the after effects and going to trial with it.
Right.
Then I'm just like, something about the way the film for me, the way it was done. I was just like, I don't like this as much. When we were in the hotel and everything was tense and everything leading up to that with the tensions and the riots and not knowing who's going to live, who's going to die. I was with you and I thought Bigelow did a really good job for that. But then when we get to the last thing where it's not as tense, and you have to like then take it to trial, and you see that John Boyega's character actually gets accused as well, and all this other stuff that is, you know, still historically the truth.
Right.
But it's just like, there was some sort of, maybe it's because it's not as tense, and so I don't feel as in it as much. And I'm like, you just put me through like an hour or so of a ringer. I want to be done with this. Mm-hmm. That like dealing with the trial and dealing with the after effects and seeing, you know, what that had on the characters. I was like, I get this is all true. And we have the epilogue of what happened to each of these characters, but I'm kind of, are we done yet? By the end of it, I was like, I loved you up until you get to the actual trial. And then it's just like, even without knowing the history, I already kind of know where
you
this
know
is
what's
going.
Happen, right?
This is not going to end well for them. Mm-hmm. I'm almost surprised at like the black audience members in the trial who are like upset when they don't get justice. And I'm like, I'm looking at it from, you know, a postmodern viewpoint of, I know the history, you're probably not going to get justice. But in the 1960s, did you really expect to with three white officers?
Exactly.
Just like, this is just a story you keep hearing over and over. And especially, you know, this clearly was a movie made for the times. It only just came out last year as we're having our own things with, you know, white officers killing black unarmed men. I was like, right. I get what you're doing there. But even though this is, you know, possibly the most truth you can have, because we do actually have the trial record. The trial was the least impressive part for me.
Right. I think even with the other two cops saying their side of what happened and kind of selling out the other guy, and they chose not to use that information at all.
Well, and because it was, they weren't read their rights and a whole bunch of...
Right.
And you do get, you know, again, I think what's best done about this film is you do get the sense of just what the craziness of the times would have been, no matter who you were, whether you were a person who lived in those neighborhoods, whether you were a cop. The way Bigelow does with the camera work does really well for that. But also even just when you do certain situations, you do see when they're first brought in after killing the looter, when they go to the police station and it's just crazy and frantic. And there's a bunch of people who are under arrest. You even have one point, one of the detectives in the police station raises a black guy's arm and is like, whose prisoner is this?
Right.
Like they're sitting on the floors. They just don't have enough people to staff it. So I think this film does really well for giving you like that sense of craziness.
Of course.
But then when you actually get down to the, okay, here's the end results, and we actually have the record to prove this, for some odd reason, I guess maybe because they couldn't take as much liberty with it, that part was not as impressive.
Right. And I'm not even just like angry about the situation or disappointed. It just kind of, with everything going on now, you're just like, okay, yeah, that's to be expected, which is sad. You know,
yes,
to
right,
have that kind of a feeling like, oh, well, what did you really expect? Like you said, Stacey, earlier, is like, were you really going to expect some justice for whatever the situation?
But Heidi, you did see this, yes?
I did. It was a train of tension and pain.
It was.
I think from the time the movie started, I did not stop sweating. It was just like, I was nervous the whole time. Because I agree, Stacey, I feel like there was... You've already seen people be killed, you know, so like trigger happy. And I just felt like at any time someone's going to die. Like, who is it going to be next?
Right.
And the whole movie, I just felt that. I was like, you never know. It could be anyone. There could be a sniper who kills them. You know, it was just like so stressful the whole time. And I actually watched it with friends. And the next day, my friend texted me and said, "That was awful and terrible, and I feel stressed."
I hate you.
He watched this.
Right. Like the next day, he was like, "I'm not going to watch this ever again with you.
You don't really need to, any though. Movie you suggest."
Right. He was like, "No more. No more."
My sister literally cried at the end, like after the friend, what's his name? Larry's friend.
Yes.
After he got shot. If you haven't seen it,
this is again based on a true story, public record from the 67. So
exactly, he dies because he like kind of stood by what he believed in. I see what you did. I'm not gonna, you know, just keep my mouth shut about it. And at that point, that's where my sister was like, "Oh my gosh!" I'm like, "The waterworks, are they coming?" You know.
Well, see, so, and the hard thing I had about that was, you know, that I think more than anything else is this. Scriptwriter taking liberties, because of course we don't know why Fred left.
Right. We don't know what he said.
Right. We do have Larry, who's still alive and didn't actually join the Dramatics, which was a real group. I didn't know until they sing that song at the end, and I'm like, I've heard that song. Okay, real group. Got it. But yeah, so he left Fred because they were doing this one by one, you have to leave.
Right.
So he doesn't know what happened to Fred, and we don't exactly know why Fred was killed. We're only just sort of being like, okay, why, if Larry could leave, would Fred not have been able to?
Right.
But this whole thing of, like, you know, and especially the friend, the Aubrey, the guy who was killed by the third police officer, which started the whole thing.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was intense.
I was just like, I'm amazed that the National Guard, you know, understood the situation without having to say it. But then the fact that the police officer who's on their team didn't, there was a lot where, especially for this, I felt, again, I think part of it is because you have the hotel and everything's so tense there. Once that ended, I got really, like, confused about timing. Because everything's clearly supposed to be one night with the hotel.
Right.
It's a bit confusing when we start with the riots and we get, like, day one, day two, and day three. And then I don't know exactly what day of the riots the hotel incident happens. But then once the hotel incident's over, it's like, obviously, it's not tomorrow that you have the trial.
Right.
But I have no clue what time it's been since the hotel to have the trial. That was part of why that didn't work for me. Of like, I was with it. Like, everything felt almost real time when we were in the hotel, because it was all just within one night.
And then, yeah, and then they start bringing in, like, parents.
Yes.
Of people. And I just, like, whose parents are these? Like, I've never seen you before.
Right.
Like, I don't know who you are.
And I didn't know everyone's name to begin with. So when you're like, you're calling about so-and-so's son, I'm like, which one was that?
Right. You can't follow it very well.
Who are we calling about? I only barely knew Larry and Fred by the time that night ended.
Right.
And
they needed name tags.
I still didn't know John Boyega. I still didn't know which officer was which. Like, at the end of it, I only basically could guess that guy was, I think it's Pales. It sounded like they said Phil. So I think that must be Officer Pales. But it's just like, I only know people by faces, and stop giving me names. You're confusing me when we actually get down to trying
to be
less confused.
That's when you just start making up your own names. You're like, officer, security guard. Oh, I really like that guy. The lead
National
singer.
Guard, yeah. Exactly. They were titles more so than characters. So I'm surprised this film, I know, did not do as well as it was expected to, because I actually think it is a pretty good film. I think part of that was just more so the timing of when it was released, because I remember seeing the trailer for it and going, that's not the time of year I would have thought you'd put that film out. But okay, because it sort of feels like, why aren't you releasing this, like, you know, the day after Thanksgiving or something? Like, it should definitely be
for
in
more
that
awareness.
Sort of, like,
a more awareness. That
well, just because it definitely feels like this is something you would push for the awards.
Mm-hmm.
So why wasn't it felt, I think it was released, you know, in early summer or something.
I just remember when I saw a trailer for this, it just didn't really grip me much. I was like, okay. And I remember the trailer, so it just focused on Boyega. You didn't really even see much else. So I was like, okay, so John Boyega's in this from Star Wars. Okay. What else is this about? And it says, oh, the riots. Okay, when it sounds like that's not what it's about. So I think it was, again, a trailer where it didn't really grip me much. I'm like, I want to go see this now. I'm like, oh, I'll see it. Maybe I won't. That's kind of what it did for me.
And I think the trailer is actually somewhat, I won't say deceptive, but not done well. Because in seeing the trailer, I thought it was John Boyega was a cop who was involved in some incident where someone got killed. And it's, okay, do you tell the truth against your fellow officer?
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, who do you stand by? Your fellow officer or your fellow black man?
Right.
That's not what's going on here at all. He's not an officer. He just happens to be on the scene. It's, you don't even get to him for a while. You start a whole bunch with the riots. So for the first, you know, 20 minutes or so, it's very confusing of, what's the story about and where are we going? Because you just start with the riots in general, and then you start getting to, oh, these various characters that are going to end up at the Algiers. So it's just like, the whole trailer, yes, it's about this, but no, it's not at all about this the way you made it look. Yeah. And it's more so the movie, I think, goes more along with the actual story than the trailer made it seem,
right,
from what we can know. So overall, I thought, really good film up until you actually get to the trial. And then at that point, maybe if you have a documentary about this, go watch that instead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So.
I agree with you there. So that is the end of the GSMC Movie Podcast for Detroit, Detroit. You guys can go look up the facts yourselves if you choose to. It's very interesting to know some of the other perspectives on each story with White Boy Rick and the Detroit riots in 1960, in the late
1960s. 1967, I believe. Yes.
Right. So on that note,
we'll
talk to you guys next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.